Music and Booze with Mo is produced and distributed by Eats Drinks TV, a service of the Center for Culinary Culture, home of the Cocktail Collection, and First Reel Entertainment, and is available wherever fine podcasts can be heard. The Center for Culinary Culture, telling the story of food and drink, one taste at a time. Welcome to Music and Booze with Mo. I'm Mo Herms, and I've worked in the music industry most of my life, so have met some pretty amazing musicians over the years. I also love a good cocktail, and I've encountered some really interesting bartenders as well. It seems that there is a lot of crossover, so when I can, I like to talk to musicians and bartenders about music and booze. Join us at the bar, won't you? Music and Booze with Mo is brought to you by The Mermaid, a cozy neighborhood bar with an aquatic flair in the Little Tokyo area of downtown LA. Open 7 days a week, featuring tropical cocktails and snacks, The Mermaid also has a daily happy hour from 5 to 8 p.m. Follow The Mermaid on Instagram at TheMermaidLA to hear about upcoming events and check them out at TheMermaidLA.com. Head to 428 East 2nd Street, Los Angeles, for a drink. Today we have a charming, charming chat with Tracy Franklin, a longtime whiskey advocate, also a former professional singer on stage. She toured in many different kinds of productions, including the one where this song was performed, The Color Purple. The song's not The Color Purple, the play is The Color Purple, and she got to play Suge. We're going to hear about that. We're also going to hear about her current work, trying to encourage, teach, advocate for more people of color to become part of the whiskey distilling process, something that she is learning herself right now. She's going through many programs and working with other initiatives, some through Uncle Nearest and Jack Daniels. I'm going to let Tracy tell you all about it because she is much more eloquent than I.
I cannot even begin to list the credits that belong to, can be attached to your name. So I don't know if you even want to bother that, but just introduce yourself first and maybe what you're doing at the moment.
Wonderful. Thank you. So my name is Tracy Franklin. I am currently a distiller apprentice in the Nearest and Jack Advancement Initiative. That is a leadership program that was created by Jack Daniels and Uncle Nearest to help people of color who are already in the whiskey industry accelerate to a larger role in management or leadership within the whiskey industry. I was picked for that almost, I guess, a year and a half ago, and have been studying my butt off, basically running around the country, working with a lot of distillers who I've been idolizing for a long time, and also working on my diploma in distillation, which is actually incredibly hard and awesome, though. I'm learning so much. Now, before all of this, well, I mean, that's just this. So before that, I was the national ambassador for Glenfiddich. I worked regionally on the East Coast, got promoted to national, which was really exciting because as a woman, as a Black woman, nobody had seen that before, right? Yeah. Especially here in the United States, seeing a woman of color lead a Scotch brand, I felt very excited to be able to have that visibility, to be able to talk to other communities that may not have felt like they had a voice or a representative, was really exciting for me. I worked with some bourbon, I worked with Angels of Envy as an ambassador for them. I worked for Glenmorangie and Ardbeg. I worked for a rum company, Rum Clément, which was pretty amazing. Got to go to Martinique a lot. That was fantastic. And before that, I traveled the world singing and dancing. So I was studied in actually Cal State Fullerton, so not far from you probably. Got my musical theater degree as well as a business degree. And then I immediately booked a cruise ship. So I toured the Mediterranean, the Baltic, and the Caribbean.
Oh,
singing
my goodness.
And dancing.
Oh my goodness. Nice. You were on the boat doing it. Oh.
Yeah. So then I got an audition for a Disney production. It's the first time. So you've probably seen Disney on Ice, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, this was the first time they actually put it on stage. So it's called Disney Live. I was the first production. We did Winnie the Pooh. And I was the storyteller. And so basically I sang all the songs and spoke dialogue and things, and basically was the live portion, a human version person in the show of Winnie the Pooh, which is fantastic. I saw a third of the countries of the world while touring with that show. We started in New Zealand. What?
Oh my God.
Yeah. So, I mean, that was so really cool. Incredible. However,
amazing.
There came a point when I just wanted to perform for adults.
Mm-hmm.
I just, you know, I wanted to do shows where people might cry, and not because they had to have the diapers changed. I wanted to, you know, I wanted to make people feel emotions beyond just yay.
or a parent who's relieved that they don't have to worry about their kid for the next 2 hours.
Exactly.
Right?
I mean, the parents were so happy that we entertained. I mean, I can only imagine. I don't have children. I love my nephews to death, but they are a handful. So I can imagine how great it is to go somewhere where your kids just sit and like scream at the stage for 2 hours. And you don't have to do anything.
Oh, right. Bliss. I'm a big fan of other people's kids.
Yeah.
Totally works for me. Well, so you've been like on stage in some capacity, like almost your entire life. How old were you when were you a little kid running around the house singing songs and all this?
So I was
always singing.
Right? I was. So my uncle was a big singer. He was really, really fantastic. So always, whenever he and I were together, we would sing songs together. And my parents would, like, they took me to see Rocky Horror Picture Show when I was like 3. And they said,
my God.
Yeah. They're like, you sat through the whole thing wide open. It was midnight. They're like, you watched the show. They're like, you were cheering with everyone. So I feel like it was just in me. I just was meant to be a performer.
Yeah.
And I used to make my brothers do shows with me. They had to learn all the dance moves.
My sister and I used to, I guess I was always sort of a radio. I did radio for a long time. And I think I was always into it because when we were little, single digits, my parents had given me a stereo right off the bat. I'm the oldest one, and they knew I liked records. So I was very young and treated it very well. But I had this stereo that had like an 8-track player in it and a cassette player, and they got me a microphone. So my sister and I would make up our own soap operas. Like we would... The two of us, because my mom watched all the soaps.
Yes.
So we would do all the drama ourselves. It'd be like, you can't talk to me like that. Oh, really? And we just record these things, play them for no one, just ourselves. But it's great. What kind of dramas were you creating when you were
I love that.
Kid?
So for us, I don't think it was necessarily, it was really just recreation.
It was musicals
that we watched. Exactly. It was really taking numbers from musicals and recreating them as for shows for the neighborhood. All of the like little kids.
God.
I was pulling in everybody. I was a very bossy little kid. I don't know why, but kids listen to me. So I used to make the neighborhood get involved. Like there would be like, we'd do dances of like 6 different people. And
oh my God,
it was pretty fun though.
Where did you grow up? What neighborhood was this?
So I was military, but most of my time was spent in California, but I did live in Guam. I lived in Oklahoma. I lived in Texas, but most of my time was spent in the Central Valley of California.
Okay.
Pretty small town, very rural.
Yeah.
Agriculture reigned there. So it was a great place to grow up. And I really, what's funny is I started dancing and I kind of let go of the idea of singing. I just sang every now and then. I think I ended up picking it back up again when I was in high school. I did a talent show and I won, and I was like, I really do sing. Like I do sing well.
What was the song? Do you remember? What song did you win with? You won. You have to remember.
It was Mariah Carey.
Oh, nice. That couldn't have been easy then.
Oh my gosh. Why can't I think of this stupid song?
You'll have to go back to the year in your mind. You have to tell us. It was an early Mariah Carey album?
Yes, it was early Mariah.
Like, what were some of the first ones?
Oh,
see, now I'm blanking out. But
right?
Well, we can move on. If you remember, spout
we're
it out.
We're going to move on. I don't remember.
But you won. Mariah Carey took you there. So you won that.
So then I did the next year and I did the Casper song. Do you remember Casper the movie?
Yeah.
There was a song at the end that they sing when he's like going or dying. And it's really sad.
Oh.
It's really sad. And like my grandmother had passed recently. And like, so I sang the song and it was beautiful. But I only got a second. And I was like, boo. Then I decided that I needed to sing the national anthem at my graduation. And they said the only way they could do it is if I did choir. So I had to do choir my senior year, but I only did it for this last quarter because.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did you get to sing the national anthem?
I did.
Okay. Excellent.
I did. And then I went to Cal State Fullerton to study. I wanted to study acting. I wanted to be a real theater actor. Mm-hmm. And then they talked about money. And I were like, and you sing and you're Black and you dance. What are you talking about? You have to do musical theater. You're going to make more money. And I was like, oh, okay.
So what was an early musical? Or what, I mean, when you were young, you said you were doing dance and stuff. What were some of those early musicals got you excited?
Absolutely. So Annie was one of those, Little Mermaid we loved, Lion King. I actually did The Wiz. It was the first time that I got yelled at. So I was probably like 13 or 14. And I was just going in as a dancer audition. I was a dancer. And he had us all sing some things. And then he pulled me aside and was like, great, I want you to sing for Dorothy. And I was like, well, who, what? What? And like, I didn't really know the music that I knew it, but not really. And
yeah. Yeah.
He yelled at me.
Because you didn't know it?
He yelled at me. He said, he's like, you are way, cause he's like, you are so talented and you should have studied this music. You should come in knowing this. Like, I had no idea I was going to be considered for the lead in a college show. What? So I honestly, while at that time I was very taken aback. It did inspire me. And I ended up working with him later in life at another theater. We did Eight Misbehavin' together. And I was like, do you remember this? He's like, I absolutely do. He's like, and I'm glad that you listened because now you're working. And it's true. It was true. I came out of school working. I was very, very lucky.
That's amazing though, that you got to work, you know, after that and you took many different paths on it. I kind of am laughing at all of the Disney repeats.
Yeah.
It's like Disney keeps coming up for you somehow. Disney, these kind of more whimsical sorts of things.
Absolutely.
For that to happen?
That's funny. I mean, The Wiz though is not Disney.
The Wiz is not Disney. The Wiz is not and Disney. Misbehaving is not Disney either.
It's not Disney.
Yeah.
But yes, Disney was very inspirational, especially in those younger years. I mean, we're kids and we're seeing all these cool cartoons and they sing and it's wonderful. And then I think that though, one of the things that people always said was that I just had a very clear, crisp voice, that I had like these Disney eyes. I have a very expressive face. Mm-hmm. It was kind of meant for children or, you know, like these positive outlook sort of shows and things. But then it even, so I booked Color Purple and I wanted to be Celie so bad. Ooh. I wanted to be Celie so bad. The second I walked in the room, they were like, Celie, what are you talking about? You're Shug. And I was like, no. They're like, you are Shug Avery. This is like, it's not even, so I did Shug Avery. I was the understudy in the national tour. And then I'd done a couple productions, so I got to play Shug. Wow. And nobody ever considers me for Celie.
Wow. But still, you're still in there. That's amazing. Absolutely. Though. That's like, I mean, how long were you doing this?
So if I talk about that, then people can figure out how old I am. So
okay.
That's why
let's not do that. So you got a lot of theater in.
Yes, okay. I am not young anymore. I am an older woman and it's
no
funny.
One would I'm, know. And it's
and
not
no
just
one
these
does know.
Filters.
And I think that because that's because I wish that I weren't as self-conscious about it, but I've been thinking about not revealing my age for such a long time. Mm-hmm. That it's kind of ingrained and I know I should just be over it and embracing it, but I'm just not there yet. I'm sorry, guys.
That's okay. You don't have to, but I love that you've got to perform so much. I mean, a lot of people who want to get into live performing don't get that opportunity. And it sounds like you had really good opportunities too. Not just like plucked away in some tiny little regional theater. Right. You actually got to travel a lot.
I did. I am very, very lucky. So once I decided I wanted to perform for adults, I came back to New York and I booked Hairspray. So
oh,
I was
wow.
touring. Yeah. So, wow. I mean, I was, and again, I think part of it is that I just do have a clarity of my voice that just rings very, that just works well with a group or as a soloist. I had all of that dance experience, which was essential. You had to be a triple threat. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. I was willing to jump up and travel.
And
that was never a thing for me. I wanted to be on the road. I was used to it. Being in the military, I was used to not having a stable home base.
Yeah.
And I guess, part of it is I was very well prepared. I felt like coming out of college, they really taught us great audition techniques. They taught us about keeping in touch with, agents and producers and things. And I think that really did help coming out of school with a very well-rounded sort of education on how to get the gig, not just how to perform.
Yeah. And it's also very physically demanding.
Absolutely.
I mean, my mother was a dancer, and just that's without singing on top of it, singing and acting and emoting and, projecting and all of that. Like, I think I can, if I sing with everything I've got in my car, I can find myself winded real fast. Why aren't you doing it anymore?
Well, there's a few reasons.
Yeah.
So yes, it is very physically demanding. Mm-hmm. And because I look younger than I am, there was mm-hmm. came a point when I was preferring to do things that were more stand and sing. Even a little bit of dancing, fine, but they still wanted to just keep me and kick my face. I'm a 20-year-old, and I was not 20. And my agent said, if this is a good time to take a break, if you want to take a break, like mm-hmm. if you want to mm-hmm. pursue something else, if you want to just see. And I was like, well, I'm going to take just a short break. I'm just going to be in Florida with my new beau, got mm-hmm. a job with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And we're just going to go down there. I'm going to fly back for any big auditions. I mean, you think that's what you're going to do. That did not happen. So instead, I really pursued, rushed headfirst into this whiskey thing that I had been experimenting with in New York. Mm-hmm. So when I was in New York, I was bartending, but also doing these jobs with different whiskey companies. And so started to really get to know a lot about whiskey and the communities they were targeting. And at that mm-hmm. time, they weren't targeting people of color. They were not targeting women. They were not targeting the LGBT mm-hmm. community. Mm-hmm.
I was just having this conversation about white and male whiskey is still. Yes. I mean, it's so much better now.
It is better.
But yeah. Mm-hmm.
One of my dear friends, Jennifer Wren, she mm-hmm. was actually someone who had helped me get connected with this company where I was working for whiskey. And she and I were like, why aren't we creating our own company? So we had created a whiskey marketing company where brands could hire us. And we would throw an event that actually reached out to people who may have not been exposed to your brand before. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. We did quite well, but then being poor, we took a job that had health insurance and benefits and moved mm-hmm. to California, and I moved down to Florida. Like, it was one of those things where we just couldn't keep it going without an influx of cash, and neither mm-hmm. of us really had that. So we took jobs that were stable with 401ks. Unfortunately, we let the business go. I think it would have actually been incredibly successful. That's not always the way things go.
Yeah. And that wasn't the time.
It wasn't. So then when I was in Florida, there was a new whiskey bar opening in Tampa. They ended up having over 400 whiskeys on the back bar. Mm. And my knowledge came in handy. So one day while I was serving at the bar, the brand manager for Glenfiddich sat in front of me, and I took him through a tasting, and he asked for my resume. Mm. And that is how I booked the Glenfiddich job.
Wow.
So I had already been working in whiskey, learning about whiskey, educating people in whiskey, but to be able to have a job and a role that was that visible was really something very exciting for me. And once I started into whiskey, I was an equity actor. So it wasn't like I could just do community things.
Yeah.
Once you're equity and you have your card, you are sort of limited when you want to do smaller productions.
Yeah.
But I didn't want to let my card go. I wasn't done performing. Like, my heart's like, I still cry sometimes, like listening to certain things, or when I go to shows, it takes everything in me to like not be just like a weeping baby missing being on stage. So I am now, yes, I get to tell stories about whiskey and traditions and heritage and really teach people about why we should appreciate this beautiful golden spirit. It's different than regular performance. I'm not taking someone on an emotional journey, mm-hmm. but I am providing an experience and education at the same time. And I actually had a really rough year last year and mm-hmm. had some surgeries that took me out, and they injured my diaphragm.
Oh no.
Yeah. So I am coming back from that, but it will just sometimes, like, I just can't catch my breath on my left side. My lung will, it's like, it was like wrapping it inside. It was very strange. I've never had it like a feeling like that in my entire life.
That is so, just,
he said the way this thing, this tumor is placed, you have a nerve basically that's going over it that controls your diaphragm. And if we sever this nerve, you will lose all control. You will never be able to control that. And we'll have to sew it, stitch it to your wrist.
Oh, weird.
So you just like, you're going into surgery. This is a big risk. You know that this is so, basically instead, all they did was nick it and bruise it. So I didn't lose it. So it's basically, when I woke up, it felt like it was like peeling in, but as months have gone on, it's relaxing. It feels more like a bruise now than anything. Sometimes it goes a little numb and tingly, but it's coming back. So I am very excited to be able to belt.
I was going to say, soon. Can you sing yet? You know, are you just sort of singing softly to yourself right
now? I sing a little bit, right? So actually, one of the reasons that we're doing this now is because earlier this week, there was Robert Burns, college poet. The celebration of Burns Night happened on Tuesday, and I was part of a production with Andrew Weir. And he and I were the co-hosts for an event called Burns Distilled. So it's the first time he's done it. And it was fantastic. Had a full live band. I mean, a full production quality recording.
Fantastic. I had no idea. I knew you were doing something, but I didn't know it was involving all of this.
It was fantastic. So, we recorded at the McKittrick Hotel in New York.
Oh.
And so now it's available streaming. So we'll be, I think Sunday is when we're going to like all get online together to watch it and then do Q&A. And it was so much fun to perform again. My whole body was buzzing.
Oh yeah.
It was just buzzing. Oh. I sang just a tiny short little bit, but the musicians were like, "Do you sing? Like, you should sing."
You're like, "Do I sing?"
Honestly, I don't. I tell people I don't sing. Well, I don't.
You do. Sing. You just don't sing the way you used to sing.
That's exactly
touring.
It.
You're not on stage touring. Well, you know, a couple of years ago, I interviewed Dale DeGroff, and you, whom I'm sure you know, and he did tour for a couple times, and he did this combination of talking about cocktails and then playing jazz piano and singing to people and stuff. Yeah. And it's just, he just had that urge to get out there and do that. He's like, "I do this too. So I'm going to bring it together and do that." And he went on a tour, and it's sort of like, yeah, you know, maybe you can find your way one day when you've educated yourself so much, you're like, "I need to take a year off. I'm going to hit every piano bar in this country and I'm going to do a little show."
Yeah, no, that's probably coming up soon. I think my brain is starting to want to like take a
breathe. Well, you're someone who I've been a cocktail enthusiast for a long time. And I worked behind the scenes in the music industry. And I always saw that I'm more useful helping others get up there. Right. So I was on radio. I'm like, okay, here's a great band that I don't know if people know of. Here's a great singer-songwriter that I love. Let me interview you because I can talk to you and we can use my airtime to give you some news. And so that's where I always feel my strength is. So, but when it came to the bartending world, I can make myself drinks at home and I can make friends good drinks at home, but I have so much respect for everyone out there who can make a wonderful cocktail and who can do what you're doing is learn so much, retain all that information. I have been to so many whiskey tastings. I know more than the average person, but I don't remember all these little details.
Right.
There's so much there that's fascinating. I'm an agave girl, but a friend of mine, but then I hang out with tiki people, you know, so they're like, "For an agave person, you sure drink a lot of whiskey and know a lot about, you know,
rum."
I'm like, but let me show you this mezcal. But you're someone I've been very aware of because you've been very present. You're very out there on the scene. And it's always made me happy because you are a person of color doing this. And I don't see that often. I'm Latin. So I'm always like, I cannot find you ladies. I know you're here somewhere. So I think what you've done is amazing. Just being out there, being a spokesperson and showing that it can be done. Because we need to see more people like ourselves represented out there so that there are more people out there. So when you were casually getting involved in whiskey, just, you know, and then you met this person, you're like, "What? I can make whiskey my job." And then you just took it from there. So tell us more about that path. Like when you got hired on to be a brand ambassador the first time and just started expanding.
You just went high.
Yeah, I mean, that was a very big leap. So I understood that whiskey could be a job only because I lived in New York and I knew a bunch of whiskey ambassadors.
Yeah,
so I knew that you could do that, but I wasn't done performing. Right. I always wanted to have the ability to go back on tour again or to do that off Broadway show or to go, you know, whatever it may be.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until I was in Tampa and had really stepped away from performing and that distance created, I don't know, the struggle to perform, the struggle to live in New York is real.
Yeah.
And when you step away and things are more relaxed and you're working a regular job and you're like, oh, wow, life can actually be easier. I can work a job that pays for my health insurance and I don't have to worry about where I'm finding my weeks. And I can do it just all of a sudden. It was like, wait, there's a little ease here. And I wanted to see what that meant. So first just working as a part-time ambassador for Whiskey Company in Florida. And then when I got the Glenfiddich role, moved up to DC and, you know, it was full time. And unfortunately, because I do work so hard, I definitely overworked. Mm-hmm. I spent all of my time out there on the road, learning, teaching. It was a lot. Mm-hmm. And that's where there just was no time, no space or room for what I loved, which was performing and enriching and watching shows and being a part of theater and music. Really got put by the wayside. And I love what I do within the spirits world. I think that one of the things that we really have to do just as human beings is to balance who we are separately from what we do.
Yeah. It's one of those, be careful when you take something you love and make it your career, make it your work, because you can burn out something that you love. And there is that balance too. You know, you have to take a break like you did from performing for a minute, but then you went 110% the other direction.
Right. And started smoking and drinking cigars until my voice was like, whoa, 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 whoa. Like, I was like, okay, that's different.
I wasn't going for this. Yeah. It's a whole new range, Tracy.
It absolutely is. And honestly, I should just embrace it and use it and sing it where I sit. We'll sing where it lays now, but, and I'm working on it. I'm working on finding comfort in my voice the way it is, because what I love is that ability to emote and to share my emotions, to make somebody else feel what I feel through my voice is a very different thing. It's very vulnerable. It's very open, but it's very intimate. And I love it more than anything for it to just stand up and sing a song. And I know what I was singing to, like, you felt that in your core.
Yeah. Yeah. I was brought up via musicals. So, you know, I understand what you're saying because I've been the one crying, you know, I've been on that other end. You've worked on me, I'm sure. But I do that, you know, I also love words. And so, you know, I love my rock and roll. And I think in that movie, High Fidelity, there's some line where he says something about, doesn't anyone realize how dangerous it is to put some of these words in kids' hands because you hear some of the most heartbreaking things and they can get in your brain and they're so dangerous, you know, cause you can be heartbroken like that. But I do have a really great musician friend who, whenever he's working on a new album, he always calls me to listen to some stuff because I always tell him what I think it sounds like. Oh, this reminds me of that song. And then he gets mad. Right. He's like, I'm not trying to steal that. I'm like, I didn't say you were, but he has some there. I remember one time there was a song he wasn't going to put on an album and he played it for me. And I started weeping within 5 seconds of the thing. I'm like, I don't know what it is with this song. And he has some songs like that. And he's like, there's a cry chord. I've determined there is a cry chord. And I think that there are certain tones, maybe you've encountered this, certain tones, certain notes, certain moments that, you know, this is the one that's going to get them.
Yeah.
Right. And what songs were like that for you? Did you have some songs that you knew when you sang this, you were going to get somebody?
Honestly, it wasn't always about sadness, but I always did Be Alive from The Wiz. That was one that I knew people were going to come with me. Like, they were always going to be right there. But also, and even still, I really love to sing just from the American Songbook. Mm-hmm. So I just think that the stories that are being told in some of those songs, oh my gosh.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be sad. There are definitely songs that are joyous that make me cry too. You know, that just, they're just so it's just like, yes, you just get right. this high end yeah. emotion, and, you know.
But there are definitely songs like that are written with that are oh my gosh, Ragtime.
A song from Ragtime. You're gonna have to say
I Buried You in the Ground. Daddy played piano, Daddy's hands. Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. Mm-hmm. Like, oh my gosh. Also, Sarah Brown Eyes. Like this, that song starts for me, and I immediately am like weeping because it was just my favorite because they were like dance because she's dead.
They're dancing
and he's singing to her and like oh my
God. Nothing for it but a ragtime tune on that piano. Gonna take a chance. The stars are silver notes across that sky now. Sarah Brown Eyes, come let's
such a beautiful
but is
song.
It supposed to be the is it are you supposed to be sitting at like weeping at it?
I don't who think cares? You're supposed to yeah
who cares yeah. right like we all have a unique tie mm-hmm. to stories and I think that that's what makes
exactly
musicals or just music in general
yeah.
so wonderful is that you are connected to it in a personal way.
I'm feeling emotional just thinking about that song right now. I mean music is one of those things and I told you I think when I emailed you I'm like it's easy to talk a lot about yeah. music and booze, but it's easy to talk a lot about both of them. And actually I wanted to get back to the program that you're in now,
yes.
what you're working on now. So Uncle Nearest, when that debuted a few years back and I heard about that, I was just like, wow, okay. I am so happy that this exists and yeah. that this is taking off the way it is. And that it's getting so much news and so much recognition. Again, same thing. I'm like, more of this, please. So what's your journey within the Uncle Nearest realm?
Right. So what I love about the Nearest and Jack initiative, I'm mm-hmm. sorry, I can't talk, is
you
that
talk very well.
This has also inspired a lot of other programs. So a lot of mm-hmm. people have seen what they've created and then built upon that. So mm-hmm. there is the American Spirits, Craft Spirits is doing a program called Step Up. Mm-hmm. So they've taken on two interns who are going to different distilleries and working at a distributor. And again, the same style of program. There is a Michael Jackson, the beer and whiskey expert mm-hmm. Foundation, who's also working with a lot of brewers and distillers to, again, provide education and opportunities for them to excel. And Byron Copeland and I are in the Nearest and Jack, and we're both on our own paths. Basically, his is much more geared towards management, business management, mm-hmm. and maybe distillery management, whereas mm-hmm. mine is very process production, quality control focused. It's been an incredible opportunity. I've learned so much. And it's been one of those things where you don't know what you don't know.
Mm-hmm.
So mm-hmm. there is, and all I knew was that I would never stop learning if I studied whiskey.
Yeah.
I would never stop learning. So as I started this program, I had a list of all of these things that I wanted to achieve. And as I started to knock them off, the list just kept getting longer. And then I wanted to see what, you know, how does this distillery do this particular thing? How does this distiller think about this particular mm-hmm. process? Mm-hmm. And what are the actual technical courses I can take to then learn more about how I can experiment and how I can bring something new to the mm-hmm. industry? Mm-hmm. And so I'm going to be coming to the end of the program in the next few months. I've already talked to Fawn. We haven't figured out quite yet when, because I take my diploma test for the first two modules in June.
Mm-hmm.
So whether I finish before that or not, we're not sure, but really this last few months, I really just want to get into a distillery.
Yeah.
I had the opportunity with Sagamore Spirits to work with them like every 2 to 3 days a week for almost 3 months. Mm-hmm. That's really what I need again now at the end, mm-hmm. because I've gained mm-hmm. so much knowledge and perspective that I didn't have before. So mm-hmm. I just need to get back onto a floor with this new mm-hmm. knowledge and insight and
the real life experience.
Yes, yeah. exactly. Mm-hmm. And really start mm-hmm. to translate those things and integrate them into each other. I am excited to be able to bring some new people into the program. I know that they're going to be looking to accept applications in the next few months. We're working on what that's going to look like and building up programs for people that may want to be leadership in marketing or leadership in HR. So there's this, again, people don't think about the broad perspective when you're talking about this industry.
Yeah.
Every job exists. So everyone's always like, oh, what should I study? Study whatever makes you happy, because that job will be exist within the whiskey industry. You can be an accountant, you can be HR, you can be marketing, you can be sales, you can, you know, you can do copy, you can be a graphic designer. All of those jobs are necessary. So if you just want to work in the industry, I want you to work in the industry in a way that's supportive of what you love and who you are.
Exactly.
Versus studying to become a role that is visible. Right. Yeah. And I think that that's what, that's also our fault, because we have this romance around the master distiller and the master blender, how amazing and how exciting these guys are. And they do all these wonderful things. But what about the maltman? Like, what about the grain woman? What about like the accountant who did all my bills? How about the person who got delivery and took my COA? Everybody is essential. So one of the things that I hope to be able to do is to really celebrate every person in the industry, people with those weird jobs that don't get to be on top, on the front of magazines, but who to me are just as important, possibly sometimes a little more.
Even more. It takes a village. It really does.
Yeah.
And I think people to find their roles.
Exactly. Yeah. So I think by celebrating some of those smaller positions, I can start to change the way people think about the industry.
Amazing. That's amazing. It's so wonderful to, you know, wind up in a place that you love. And it sounds like, you know, for you, you've been able to explore so many aspects of it.
I have.
And I think you being the person you are, you're used to being visible and being here, but at the same time, you know, I liken, I've had these conversations with bartenders where they talk about working with their team and how it's like being in a band. And, you know, same thing, you've worked with a troupe, you know, you know how to make these things work within a group.
Right.
And that's really great that you are emphasizing that for others who may not have thought that. I mean, that's something where I found, like I said, I'm better behind the scenes. And I know that, and I know my strengths are there. So I'm a partner in a bar, and they were just like, well, if you want to bartend, we, you know, we can train you, you can do this. And I'm like, you know what? No, let me write the press stuff, because I'm good at that.
Right.
And I will come in and say, thank you guys for creating these wonderful drinks that I can write about, and then mail that out to people, you know, because that's something I can do. So thank you for pointing that out too. That's, I think it's good for people to hear that, because they may think, oh, I have to be a bartender, and then I have to do this and I have to do that. And they may not be aware that the fact that they can draw can help.
Well, and that's, and I think that that is actually, it's done a disservice to the industry, because we need people who are in roles that they love. So people may just out of, you know, just thinking that I want to be in the industry, so I have to go to, I have to do biology or chemistry or, or engineering. I have to do those roles. I have to study that in school to get into this industry. And then they end up in an engineering role that they hate, because they actually wanted to do art or they actually wanted to do marketing. But they thought to be successful within this industry, there's this small box, when it's not, it's wide open. The diversity of roles, the amount of talent that we need is unending. And the amount of skills that you already have probably will work. You know, if you've already been a working adult, there is a way we can fit you in. I have no doubt. But you've got to be proactive. You really need to ask questions. You've got to be passionate. You really just have to want to be involved with a team. You really, it's quality control. It's caring about what's going to be coming out. It's caring about the people around you. And maybe that's not true of every distillery, but I know that when I have the opportunity to build a team and to run a distillery, I want it to be supportive. I want it to be inspirational. I want it to be educational. I want people to leave me to go start their own, right? I don't want to be someone who's like, oh, nobody has ever leaving. I want to empower people so that they can go out and change this industry themselves.
Yeah. And I think that's the more people learn, it's like you're doing that now. You're learning so much more, and you already know more than the average person. You're learning so much more, and then you're going to put it to practice. And that's when you start learning the tweaks and the improvements or the, all of that. That's the only way. It's the only way is to get in there. You are awesome. You are so awesome. I know you work really, really hard, and I hope you take care of yourself also in the meantime.
I am learning. Awesome.
I want to wrap this up, but I always have a couple questions I have to ask, and I have a feeling you may have an answer to this one. It tends to stump people if I throw it at them. It's just, when you're home relaxing, what are you sipping on and what are you listening to? I think that a lot of people just get like, oh, I haven't considered that, and freeze up. I would do the same, but I have a feeling you won't.
Feeling you have something. So we actually, let me think, what would I be listening to? I'm trying to think of like which record would we put on.
And it does depend on the mood, I know.
It really does. Mm-hmm. That's the thing. Mm-hmm. So sipping, so if I'm sipping, this is going to be controversial for folks because I talk whiskey a lot. I drink a lot of whiskey, but honestly, I love champagne. I love it so much.
Like, there's so nothing controversial about that at all.
If I'm having a rough day, if I'm just neat, like it is the champagne that comes out, not the whiskey. The bubbles bring a levity to my life.
I was going to say it's fun. It's a fun thing. Anytime you pour champagne, that's like you're having your own tiny little party.
Right? So that's how I feel about that. So usually it'll be some champagne to start, and then maybe I'll switch to a nice malt or even just a really beautiful bourbon or something, mm-hmm. and sip that. I mm-hmm. do make a lot of cocktails though too, so I might make an old fashioned. I love making spiced syrups. So I always have homemade syrups that I like to use for an old fashioned.
I don't use them fast enough because it's just me and my husband at home. And I'm like, but I have this whole thing of the tikka masala syrup that I made. And he's just like, I can't do it.
I have learned to make much smaller portions. That was a problem I had. And I started giving it to the people that are downstairs that are attending our apartment building. Uh-huh. The door people. I don't know what to call them. That's it.
Yeah, it sounds horrible, folks.
Doesn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. It sounds kind of archaic, but I know.
Yes. It's right.
Yeah.
And so I started giving it to them, and then they were getting overwhelmed with it. So I just, I learned how to make smaller portions. Okay. So on what would I be listening to?
But what would you put on the turntable?
You know what? Right now, the first thing that popped into my mind is Liz Wright.
Ooh.
So Liz Wright is this gospel soul jazz singer with this beautiful, rich alto voice. And my God, there are songs she sings that just sing to me. Mm-hmm. And there's one, and it says, maybe she's just a morning glory. And I just,
and it does it for you.
Yes. Cause it's because she's lost in a tangle of vines. So she's this beautiful flower, but she's lost like this. And there's so many songs that she sings. There's one about salt, putting salt in the stew, how it makes everything. Oh, you don't know Liz Wright, find her and listen to Salt. That's her first album, and then go on from there.
Yeah. She is really amazing. I'm familiar
with her too. Have you seen her live yet?
No. Mm-mm. I haven't gone to live shows. Well, obviously in the last 2 years, not a lot of us have gone to live shows. But even before that, I was sort of winding down on my live shows. I used to go a couple times a week. I would be at live shows, and then I started not going so much. I don't know why. I think I needed to change them to the grown-up version where I can sit at a table and watch and enjoy,
absolutely.
Opposed to the stand-up version where somebody's spilling beer on me and stuff, because I grew out of that.
Understood. And I think because I was always in theater, I never was a big fan of like being bumped instead. I would just not go to those things. Yeah, that was never really fun for me.
Yeah.
So
I have a lot of memories from, my foot got broken at that one show.
Oh, whoops. No!
Yeah, so I'm like, maybe not so much. But so Liz Wright would actually be perfect when the time comes.
Brilliant. Like, and if you ever get the opportunity, I would definitely say do it. She is one of those that you can feel her energy like just reverberate through your entire body. It's amazing.
Into it. Totally into it. All right. Well, where can people find you if they need to find you? But I mean, right now you're very busy working and learning and studying and all of that. So
yeah.
But folks should be following your Instagram.
Please, I would love that. Spirited Tracy, spirited _ Tracy with an IE.
Mm-hmm.
So find me on Instagram there. Twitter, I'm Spirited Tracy with an IE, no _. But I don't really do a lot on Twitter.
Yeah.
I'm on, LinkedIn, all those things. But please find Instagram. Instagram is the best way.
And this Burns night that you were talking about that happened last night. I think for us it was
Tuesday.
Last night. Was it Tuesday night? Oh, yeah, 2 nights ago.
Yes.
You said it's available for streaming.
So so I believe they still might have tickets available. Yeah, it was a very particular night where you have haggis and scotch whiskey and
we did
this tasting and singing, and it was really fun. But he's creating a video that's everything clipped together really nicely.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that should be available at burnsdistilled.com. So you can take a look and check that out. if it's not there, I'm also going to be at the Charleston Food and Wine Festival beginning of
March. Ooh, fun. That's,
I'm super excited about that. Yeah.
Get the traveling in again. Right.
So thrilled. And I've never been to the Food and Wine Festival there. I love Charleston. I have a wonderful time every time I go. And now to be a part of this really wonderful event where we're celebrating this industry and food and wine is a thrill.
Oh, that's fantastic. Well, thank you so much. And I really appreciate you bringing this perspective and talking to us about the program that you're working on and everything. Yes. I think it's super important. And I'm so glad to see so much more of it out there. For all of us, non-white guys, and no offense to non-white guys, my husband is a white guy, but you know, there's a lot of them out there that we see, and you know, some of us, we could take up some room too, I think. So thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely my pleasure. And it made me feel amazing that you mentioned that. And I hope that it's doing good within the industry and around the world, being able to see more people of color represented.
Slowly but surely.
And right? I'm excited to see the change. Yeah,
totally.
So long, and how can you forget your dance when that dance is all you ever had?
If you want to follow Tracy to see what she's up to on the Instagram, then you can find her at Spirited_Tracy with an IE at the end. And she's got all kinds of stuff going on all the time. If only you were lucky enough to be where she is. She's usually in Washington, D.C., but lately she's been getting around as much as we can in these post-COVID times. And I hope to be able to cross paths with her in person at some point in the near future. Thank you so much, Tracy, for being a part of this. And you know, you want to check out her Spotify because she did a really cool playlist for us. And I should say my Spotify because that's where her playlist resides. Music and Booze with Mo is brought to you by Barkeeper, a head shop for cocktail lovers, located at 614 North Hoover Street in Silver Lake, Los Angeles. Stop by for barware, vintage glassware, a carefully curated collection of spirits, and one of the most impressive selections of bitters anywhere. Follow them on Instagram and Facebook for information regarding spirits tastings. That's barkeepersilverlake.com and also in the Virgil Village neighborhood of Silver Lake, Los Angeles. Thank you for tuning in to our barroom chats on Music and Booze with Mo. For more info about today's guest, or if you want to connect with me, check out my Facebook page, Mo Herms. Please subscribe to the podcast and feel free to tell all your friends about it. While you're there, give the show a rating and a review. It really helps to get the word out. If you want to hear the playlists our guests have curated, search She Be Mo on Spotify, SHEBMO. Find pictures of the interviewees and the cool stuff they create on the Music and Booze with Mo Instagram account. Lower your expectations and join us at the bar. Till next time, cheers.